Eric Engels is our Canadiens beat reporter at Sportsnet. And, Eric joined us now. I thought the crisis was averted. I thought Marc Bergevin avoided the crisis, but apparently not after last night. Look, I was going to say I don't want to make too much out of the mock cheering, but what the hell, it's Sports Talk Radio. I really do want to make too much out of it. Tell me why this is completely different than the Patrick Waugh situation and why I'm wrong, even mentioning them in the same breath.
Yeah, you're wrong.
Okay.
Well, two different egos, two different people, and Carey Price has been here since 2007, so it's not the first time he's been mock cheered in the net, and I think, you know, he's a mature individual who understands, you know, the fans are pretty fed up, and they're definitely fed up with the worst start in 76 years for the franchise, and he also knows that he's a part of that. You know, he's not divorced from the fact that they're 2-7-1 to start the season. He's been off his game. You know, it's one thing to be a fraction off. It's another thing to be 30th in most categories in the league when, you know, you're the consensus best goaltender in the world. And I could tell you that Carey Price doesn't need anybody at the Bell Center or anybody outside of it telling him that he needs to be better. I mean, he puts that on himself. So at the same time, you know, the other side of the coin is you've got a team that can't score a goal, a team that lost 4-0 last night in the game that he was mock cheered, and a team that has a lot of trouble defending, or even when they do play a good game defensively like they did last night, they make a couple mistakes that you can't recover from. So, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you're looking for rationality, you don't go to rabid sports fans for it.
That's true. You know, or sports talk radio for that matter.
Yeah. Whoa. I wouldn't go that far.
I would. I have.
Yeah. That's where we're at. And, you know, a note on the Poppy thing, by the way, mm-hmm. You know, here in Montreal, we buy them from veterans. So,
right.
It's a great thing if you have to buy 20 of them, in November.
Yeah. And you're going to lose them. You just are.
It's
like a tax. That's the way I view it. It's a tax.
The thing is, you got to be careful about where you lose that needle.
Now, like that's...
If you have a pet at home, you know, or...
That's very
true. A young child, like, got to be careful.
That's very true. And you have to pay attention. Because I find out, usually that first poppy, that can be dicey if you're not thinking about what you're doing. The pin goes in a little too far, and it's like a subtle reminder of some of the things you have to do as a Canadian. In November. The point you made in your column about, you know, Carey Price, though, what it might be like to make $10.5 million while your team is in a rebuild. I mean, $10.5 million is nice. I mean, no one would complain that. But, you know, look, Carey Price is a guy who's used to being in the spotlight, you know, whether it's internationally or with the Canadiens. I don't know, Eric, if you've ever sat down or had the chance to say, you know, Carey, have you ever thought about what might happen if, you know, you are in a full-fledged rebuild where not much is going to go right night after night and where you won't be able to tell people, hey, look, it's a rough start, we can bounce back. How do you think he would handle that? Because this is a guy that's used to being a pretty high standard, and I don't know if he would necessarily, or I don't know if a lot of those guys would necessarily handle, you know, a steady diet of sloppiness for a full season.
It's a great question, and I'll tell you, like, I've covered Carey Price since the day he came into the National Hockey League. I've been there since day one, and we've never sat down and had that conversation, but we always talk about Carey Price, the calm, collected Carey Price, and how out of character it is to see him smash a stick against the goalpost like he did in, I think it was Anaheim last Friday. Like, that is the, you know, I never try to be the guy that's like, well, I'm there and you're not, you know, like,
yes.
But in this particular case, I am there. And I'll tell you, like, this is one of the most competitive guys you will ever find. And it's often that he'll sit and answer questions like he did yesterday, very calm and coolly. And then he'll walk down the hall and curse at the top of his lungs, you know, for everybody to hear, or he'll smash a stick or break a garbage can or pound the walls. You know, like, this guy hates losing. It's one of the qualities that the scouts and you know, saw in him before he was drafted. And just to think that he'd be willing to put up with it over an extended period of time is not knowing what he's all about. At the same time, you know, like, when he signs an 8-year deal, he knows whether or not the Canadians are going to rebuild, that inevitably when he gets to age 34, 35 and has a season or half a season like Henrik Lundqvist did last year, and what that might be like for him and what that experience might be like for him in this marketplace, I'm sure it's a part of the equation when he put pen to paper and knew that that's just reality. You know, that's the reality of age and diminishing over time, no matter how good you are. You know, I think we'll always see glimpses of the guy who is the consensus best goaltender in the world. But as he gets older, there will be periods that he goes through, like this one. And to say that that will be easy to deal with is just, well, it's not the case. It's going to be extremely hard.
The comment you have in your story from Max Pacioretty as well, where he says, look, we're all going through this. This isn't one guy. This is everybody. You know, when I first read that, I think, okay, this is a guy who, you know, is getting frustrated that everybody's saying poor Carey, poor Carey, poor Carey. But you read a little further, and that's not what he's saying. I mean, he's basically saying, you know, we all feel the same. We're all in it together. You know, he says, we have heart in this room. I mean, I'll ask you, Eric, is there enough heart in that room right now? Is that an issue here, or is it just that there's not enough talent when you get down to it?
It's B. It's definitely B.
They're just there's not enough talent in there, is there?
If we're talking about heart, I mean, like, come on, Matt, you know, you could say a million things about Max Pacioretty in a critical way, but like, there's no guy who cares more than that guy. He cares too much. You know, Shea Weber, you know, it's verboten to talk about the intangibles of the game now, and it, with analytics, you know, so prominent. But like, let's be serious. If there's one thing we know about Shea Weber, he has heart. Andrew Shaw, you may not like him. You know, you may think he's ridiculous, but like, the guy cares more than anybody you'll ever find. Brendan Gallagher, another example. Like Jonathan Drouin, the way he's playing, last night in the game, like, Jonathan Drouin should have had 4 assists and 2 goals. I mean, he played unbelievable, and nobody could finish his plays. So, you know, talent, that wins championships, and the Canadians are far off of it, considering how things are going. At a certain point, you look at the 10 games that they played and see that they've outshot their opponents handily, and they're getting outscored not by one, you know, but by three. Obviously, it comes down to talent. And, you know, Marc Bergevin said what he had to say on Wednesday. I commend him for coming out and talking. He had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He had to show that a certain level of solidarity and accountability there. But what was he going to say beyond that the answer's in the room? Because, like, what blockbuster trade are you making in October? Like, name me the last one that was made in this league.
Right.
You know, and ultimately, you're not making one from a winning position. So it's moot. So he said what he had to say, and the guys in the room have to believe it too. They have to believe the answer is there in the room. But, you know, this team on paper was deficient in talent, and so far on the ice has shown that.
How do you think Claude Julien views the situation right now? Is this a surprise to him, or do you think that, you know, if you sort of asked him in the QT, he would tell you that maybe he didn't see this type of a start, but that the seeds for this type of a start were certainly there?
I don't think he would feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and that speaks to the fact that he's probably a really good coach.
I mean,
if you're a really good coach, it doesn't matter what's in front of you on paper. Even, you know, you could be realistic. I don't think Claude Julien looked at the paper roster of the Canadians and said, okay, we're getting off to a 10-0 start here. But at the same time, you know, I think, you know, one comment that Marc Bergevin made in the offseason has been dissected ad nauseum. And it's the one where he says that his defense is better than last year's. And his defense of that statement, to me, is laughable, because all he did was name the guys that he brought in. He didn't actually defend it. Now, if I were in his shoes, here's what I would have said. Yes, we brought in Carl Alsner and Joe Morrow and you know, the guys that are there, and left Andre Markov out, and Alexei Amelin is gone, and Nathan Boley is gone, and Mikhail Sergachev's gone, and David Schlemko has come in. I would simply have framed it as, I brought in simple style players who move the puck as quickly as possible. They're not going to do anything fancy, but that fits exactly with what my coach wants them to do. So I believe that as a whole, that will make us better. That's a better defense than what Marc Bergevin has put out there. And that is what I believe Claude Julien believes. You know, I think Claude Julien looked at the makeup of his roster and says, I can make this work with the system that I preach. The question is, has he had enough time to implement it? You know, he had half a season with a completely different roster last year, massive turnover, and then gets to training camp, and they had a terrible preseason, and you thought they were working out the kinks during that time. But let's face it, they lost six games in a row there and only won two games. And it takes time to build chemistry and learn every habit and for guys to find it together. And I think, you know, the start to the season is an extension of that, because we all know the Canadians are not great. They're not world beaters, but they're certainly not this bad. Not with the guys that they have in their roster that can make up for the fact that they're lacking a bit of talent. So we know it'll get better. I think Claude Julien believes that. I think the guys in the room believe that. And I know Mark Bergevin believes it, because he said it several times. But the question is, how much more time is it going to take?
What aside from the mock cheering of Carey Price, what is the mood in that city right now when it comes to the Canadians?
Well, the scary thing is that anger shifts to apathy, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's the most dangerous scenario for, you know, a guy like Mark Bergevin. I mean, it's fine. You know, if you ask me before the season, if the Canadians had missed the playoffs and Mark Bergevin would lose his job, I would tell you unequivocally the answer is no. Mm-hmm. You know, you look around the league, you know, you could talk about Steven Stamkos being gone from the Lightning last year for all but 17 games, but like they were good enough to make the playoffs and miss.
Right.
You could talk about, you know, the Winnipeg Jets and Kevin Sheveldayoff getting a 5-year extension, and he's got zero playoff wins to his name. And I look at Mark Bergevin, who came in and took over the 28th best team in the NHL and brought them to three division titles and six playoff series and, you know, 100-point seasons. And I mean, and we know that the roster during that time, you know, needed a lot of work, and he made some savvy moves to keep them competitive. So, like, I'm not sure one misstep would lead to his firing. But, you know, the more and more you think about it, you know, when 95% of the tweets on Twitter involve his name, when people continuously are calling for his firing, when people start to react the way they do at the game last night and react in turn by not showing up or leaving early or not showing up at the beginning, and that's when it starts to become a real issue. That's when it starts to become something that, you know, eventually the owner can't ignore. So I guess we'll see where it goes. But, you know, if you're asking me for the mood in the city, I think we're somewhere in between anger and apathy, and that's a dangerous place to be for any sports franchise.
Eric, it was good of you to join us today. Thanks so much.
It was a pleasure.